Good morning.
It's 9:02 a.m. and I'd like to call this meeting of the Texas Commission on Fire Protection to order on July 15th, 2021. We'll start with our invocation, and here with us today is Chaplain Tom Gripka from the North Hays Fire Department. Ask him to come to the podium. If there's anyone in the audience that chooses not to participate with the invocation, feel free to dismiss yourself and you can come back in when we get done. Everybody, please rise.
Am I on? Am I not on? Am I? Can you hear me okay? All right. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and representing North Hays County Fire and Rescue, Dripping Springs, Driftwood, and that area. Once again, thank you for allowing me this privilege. If we could just bow together and pray. Father, we count it a blessing to be able to serve others. I know of no other service. In fact, Jesus said he had come not to be served, but to serve. And so for us to seek out and to serve our communities and our friends and our neighbors and those that pass through our great state, Lord, we count it a blessing and a privilege. Lord, whatever the business may be today, I ask your blessing upon those that conduct the business. I ask your blessing upon those departments that may be struggling with certain situations that are maybe unbeknownst to all of us. Lord, I pray for the safety of our staff and for those that will take the apparatus into those places of danger. Lord, I pray that they'll be safe and they'll use their abilities and their skills and the things that they have learned just to further their service and to rescue and save lives and property. So, Lord, today we ask your blessing upon this time, upon this group, and upon the future that we have. We have a great future ahead of us, God. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, sir. Please join me in the prayer of respect to our country's flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now our state's flag. Thank you. You may be seated.
Come on. Set on the big screen up there.
Yeah. Texas. Come on.
Put a poster right there. Yeah. All right. That one gets me every time. And I have it laminated right here in the front of my book. I need to set my book back here. My apologies. I might get excommunicated from the state now. All right, moving on down the agenda. Item two.
All right, item two, roll call and excuse of commissioner absences. Commissioner Cantu.
Here.
Commissioner Jones, present. Chairman Stillman.
Here.
Commissioner Copney.
Present.
Commissioner Lowell.
Present.
Commissioner Vandegrift.
Present.
Commissioner Davilez. Commissioner Morgan. Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Commissioner Glenn.
Here.
Commissioner Sharma.
Here.
Commissioner Hamilton.
Here.
Commissioner Smith.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Morgan is out of the country on vacation, and Commissioner Davilez advised yesterday she had another commitment she couldn't get out of.
Okay. Like to entertain anybody want to entertain a motion for excusing the two commissioners that are absent?
So moved.
Second. I have a motion by Commissioner Jones, second by Commissioner Copney. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
All right, item three, commission meeting minutes of April 29, 2021.
All right, commissioners, in your packets, you've had a chance, hopefully, to review the minutes from our previous meeting. Is there anything anybody would like to call attention to or question about? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Item 4, the Budget Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on July 15, 2021 during the commission meeting and provide a report relating to any recommendations developed by the subcommittee relating to modifications to the agency operating budget and strategic plan.
Not been advised of anything that needs to be discussed on this item?
The only thing that has been confirmed recently is we are going to be required to return 10% of our budget, roughly 10%. They gave us the official number last week. It's $175,000, and we're going to be close to that.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions on item number 4?
Item 6, report from Commission Representative to the Homeland Security Council. Oh, my apologies. Number 5, reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters related to organizational purposes, functions, and objectives, including but not limited to Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firemen and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, and the State Fire Marshal's Office.
All right. Up first, Texas Fire Chiefs Association.
Good morning. The Fire Chiefs Association is having a banner year. We've got our Fire Chiefs Academy coming up September 19th through 24th, and we officially had to declare it sold out. We've exceeded the hotel space at a couple of overflow hotels as well as our meeting space. We have 61 registered for year one, 68 registered for year two, for a total of 129 students when we closed registration. Our Fire Chiefs Workshop, the registration will be opening soon. It's December 14th through the 17th at the Hyatt Hill Country in San Antonio. Our elections are coming up soon. We have third vice president. We've added an ESD representative that will be elected at large to represent the growing number of ESDs throughout the state. Our TML representative is up. Chief Jimmy Chu, for those of you that haven't heard, is retiring at the end of the month. I think his effective date is August the 5th. Jimmy served in that TML slot for the TFCA for many years, and so that position will also be up, and several of our regional directors as well. And then our best practices program has, man, it's really taken off. We just awarded Lake Worth to them on Tuesday evening. We need to schedule with Chief Wilson and Mesquite. They'll be the 26th agency in the state to achieve that designation, and as of this morning, there are 27 other departments actively pursuing that that have registered with us, and we've continued to work with TML. As far as I know, TML's picked up the initial cost of every one of those agencies that's registered thus far, and they've agreed to look at putting more money in it in the future as the program continues to grow. And then lastly, our second-in-command workshop, the registration will be opening soon. And it will be at the Texas A&M Hotel and Conference Center in College Station, January the 16th through the 18th, 2022. But all things are well. We've added about 300 members over the last year and a half, and we are going to open up our registration for 2022 membership in October and collect our dues from October to January and get more of a calendar year. We've set our best practices renewals every October or every July. So when those come up, all departments that have that that have surpassed that third-year mark will renew now in July and kind of got some structure to all of that. Be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Any questions for the Fire Chiefs Association? Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, sir.
Next up, the Texas State Association of Firefighters.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jim Reedy. I'm the Texas State Association Firefighters Liaison to the Fire Commission and have been so, I guess, for about 15 years. Glenda Shields sends his apologies. He's at our convention in beautiful Rockwall, Texas. Our 18,000 members sent delegates to Rockwall for our annual convention to plan our business for the upcoming biennium. And that's really all we have going on right now. We support the commission and everything that we can and look forward to some great years coming up. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for the State Association of Firefighters? Thank you, Jim. Next up, State Firemen's and Fire Marshals Association of Texas.
Good morning, all. Good to see you.
Good morning.
I hope everybody is surviving here in the middle of this construction site, the ongoing construction site. I see buildings now, which I didn't weren't there too long ago, so hopefully everybody's doing okay. I'm Tim Rutland. I'm the executive director for the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association. A couple of quick items this morning. The association was able to conduct its annual conference at the end of this past month. I think I had mentioned before in my last report it was going to be an abbreviated conference, and this very much was. It was about a 2.5-3-day conference, with the idea being the association would take care of the business that it needed to take care of. It also conducted had a memorial service on Sunday morning, and we adjourned following that memorial service. It was a successful conference overall. It was held in Lubbock at the Overton Hotel and Conference Center in Lubbock. And we are already beginning planning for our next conference in Beaumont in 2022. We expect that venue probably to be back to normal, back to historical norms as far as what will get accomplished during that conference. The one key component that we weren't able to do in this conference this year was training. That was really what was left out. And with that said, I'll mention now that what is coming right around the corner, and I'm sure y'all are going to hear a report on this anyway this morning, is the municipal school, which is an exceedingly important part, venue for much of the Texas Fire Service. And I know that a lot of people in this room actually are involved in that every year. So it is a very, very important venue. It looks like enrollment, as best I could tell, is doing quite well this year. I'll be over actually on the campus ops side where the classroom subject areas are happening. This is my rookie year, so it'll be an interesting time for me. I finally get to get involved in this, so I'm excited to be a part of that. But again, it's a very important venue for so many people in the fire service. Some of you may not know that the fire school has actually been in existence and has been in partnership with this association for over 70 years. So to say the least, this is an important thing for a lot of folks in the fire service every year. I saw that enrollment over on the campus was doing very, very well. A lot of full classes and a lot of other classes that are close to full. So we hope to have a good school over there here coming up in another week or two. The only other thing I'll mention is kind of a quick update. I think I'd mentioned the last time that we were looking at instituting online testing for certifications for the association. We continue to move in that direction. Our certification board, a committee from that certification board, is kind of putting the finishing touches on the test banks that we're going to be using. So I hope very soon we're going to be able to do that. Setting up, again, in a lot of ways similar to what the commission has done, where we're going to be utilizing testing centers around the state. My thanks to Cliff Grant and David Alexander for helping me with contacts for those so that I could get in touch with some of these folks and kind of get those underway. So again, my thanks to them for that. So I think we're getting close. I'm hoping by the end of the summer we may be able to give our first test. That's what I'm shooting for, at least anyway. Aside from that, again, my thanks for allowing me to be here. And as always, please let us know if there's anything anything that you need, if we can come alongside and partner with you on anything, we are always here. I'm looking forward to working with Commissioner Jones and that committee on the review of Chapter 435. But again, anything else you might need, just let us know. Please don't hesitate to call. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions for the State Farmers and Farm Marshals Association? Okay. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Up next is the Texas Fire Marshals Association.
Good morning. I'm Ariana Kistner, the current president of the Texas Fire Marshals Association. We've been actively working on our 2021 conference, which will be coming up this November, the 3rd through the 5th in San Marcos, Texas. We are excited to say that our enrollment is going to be up quite a bit. We're looking at over 150 additional attendees this year, which is great for us. We've also been working diligently over the last couple months to foster our partnership with ICC. We've had a long-standing relationship with NFPA, and just haven't really had a good relationship with ICC just through training opportunities. We've partnered with them now and hope to be bringing additional training classes to Texas, all across Texas, actually, in a regional kind of format. We're currently in the middle of our sixth fire and emergency management training class with Sam Houston State, so that program's continuing to be very successful. And just on a side note, we started our ESD committee within our organization, which was new this year. It was first done as a president's choice, but it's on our agenda for November to be a permanent assignment, and their committee membership is rolling rapidly. So that's it. Any questions for the Texas Fire Marshals? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Texas Association of Fire Educators. The Texas A&M Forest Service.
Good morning. Appreciate y'all letting me be here. My name's Guy Duncan. I'm the assistant chief over the TIFMIS program, and I help coordinate that across the state. I'm here this morning to ask the commission to help us assist the firefighters better by accepting the online training. In the past, we did not accept the online training, and now we're asking that it be accepted. About 2 years ago in 19, we were asked how can we better serve the fire departments, both volunteer and municipal, throughout the state. And the best way we determined to do that was by allowing the online training. That saves each department about $1,000 per person for them to attend in person. If they have to attend in person, it's going to cost them approximately $1,000. The online training has been, we have a process set in place to where the roster submitted, the instructors are vetted, and then after the online is completed, we come together and have a field day and an in-person test. So everything is vetted and tried out.
Can I interrupt you real quick? So that's going to actually be on item 14,
agenda item,
which we haven't gotten to yet.
Okay.
So this is basically just the overview of what you guys got going on statewide.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right, man.
Didn't see that.
You're excited to be here. We're happy to have you here.
Yeah. Hey. So right now we have about 82 people out of state serving in California, Arizona, Idaho, Washington, and Montana. We have one hand crew, multiple engines that are out, and expecting to see more. The U.S. Forest Service chief sent out a letter this morning stating that it's going to be, they're wanting everybody to be available. Also working on the IMT conference that'll be probably this fall we're going to try to have. And that's really all we got right now. Sorry about getting started
on that
early.
We'll get to that in just a minute.
That's getting you ready for it.
Yeah, hang on, we have a question.
I have a question, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Did you want to provide an update on a leadership change at CFS?
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. End of May, Tom Bogus, who is our director, retired. And right now we have an interim director, Al Davis, from Teaks, and he is our interim leader. Also, Mark Stanford has stuck to the side as the fire chief, and Wes Moorhead has taken his place. he started that July 1st. Mark's going to stay on till August. Also, Don Galloway will be stepping down. He's our kind of our finance and legal person. So looking forward to some changes that are coming. I'm not saying I'm looking forward to them, but they're coming, and we're going to accept them as they come forward. Did I miss anything, Chief?
No, I think you got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Guy. Up next is the National Fire Protection Association.
Good morning, Commission members, and it's so nice to meet you in person. I told you that as soon as the restrictions on our travel happened that I would come in person, and so hopefully that's a testament to us keeping our word at NFPA, and you are very important across the fire service of this state, but also nationally as the gold standard that we have. And so my name is Kelly Ransdale. I am from North Carolina, just south of Raleigh, and I cover the south central portion of NFPA and the regional ops division. So I'm their regional director. So I have Texas and Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Missouri, and North Carolina. Randy Safer sends his regards. So many of you know Randy from Beaumont, and he was our regional director for a long time. And I got to work alongside Randy, and so he always tells me about the importance of this commission and our partners, and it was so nice to see many of them this morning. I was told that there were some questions about updates within NFPA, so I just want to give you a few of those. One is we did launch our Fire Prevention Week theme this year, and hopefully you saw that, Learn the Sounds of Fire Safety. That came completely out of COVID, where many times people were doing work calls or school calls from home, and smoke alarms were chirping in the background. Even sometimes carbon monoxide alarms were going off, and people don't know what those mean. And that is even if they have a working one. So this year's theme focuses around smoke alarms and CO alarms, both the sounds that they make when they activate, but then also what the chirp means and the end-of-life warning means. So hopefully you will be involved with that campaign. It's always the week that includes October 9th, and there are tons of free materials available at firepreventionweek.org. Also, State Farm is funding Fire Prevention Week kits here in Texas, and so if your fire department were to be contacted by State Farm, they're donating kits to Texas fire departments. Of course, Texas is a big state, and we can't cover all of it, but they certainly are providing that partnership through NFPA. In addition to that, it is our 125th anniversary. As part of that, if you go to nfpa.org/125th, you'll see an infographic and some additional information about all the things that have happened over more than this 100 years that we've been in existence. As part of that, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, I pulled that up the other day, and as many of you know, there was a huge fire in Bangladesh. Same scenario as the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. So you hope that we learn from these tragedies, but it certainly leaves a lot of work for all of us to do. We have a lot of free resources, and one of the questions I got was, where do we find the free trainings that are offered by NFPA? So if you go to our website, nfpa.org, you don't have to be a member to access any of this. But when you go there, if you click on news and research, when you go there and click resources, there's a tab for emergency responders. And on there, you'll find information on energy storage safety systems. There's a free one on alternative vehicles. There are many of them around Austin that I've seen today, and so I know that's in the forefront of your mind. There's also an emergency field guide that talks about the different types of electric vehicles and addressing that. And there's also a free NFPA 350 training that's confined space hazards. And we just released a brand new Fire in the U.S. report. It is a follow-up report to America Burning, and it follows that same thread of looking at all the different factors that affect fires in America right now. So I hope you'll access that. We do have a 125th conference series that is an online series. Those are one days. The next one is coming up July 20th. And then specifically consolidation, I was asked about resources on that, and I know Mike passed around a press release that lists it, but many of you have questions about consolidation. If you go to our webpage, and Grace was sweet enough to pull it up for us, and click on resources, you'll see standards in action. And when you go there, that first tab says Emergency Responder Consolidation Project. And it will outline kind of the process that the Standards Council followed and how that project came about. And then as you page up on the page, you'll see the documents and how they were consolidated, and also the time schedule for that. So if you have questions, I will be around all day, and I wanted to make sure that we brought you that information. In addition, many of you are part of the National Fire Code Subscription Service, and we have heard for a long time that you have part of that so you can access the codes and standards. Well, there is a new tool called NFPA Link, and you can see at the very top right beside the catalog. If you click on Link, it will show you how to use that. That's an interactive platform that by the end of August, all of our current editions of our codes and standards will be in there. It will also have offline compatibility. Many of you have asked about that when they did away with PDFs. That was a big sticking point. And so how do you access those? You'll be able to actually access them offline. And the cool thing about this is that subscription services for this start at $9.95 a month. That's for one user. It goes down from there. And so what we found, and I've done many overviews for fire departments, and Mike and I may be able to do one through a Facebook Live to walk you through it. But when you go there, you can do a two-week trial and try it out. I met with the State Fire Marshal's office yesterday to show them how to use it. And I can tell you that it's very intuitive and it's going to be a much better tool for your fire departments. And so if I can assist you with that, I'm always available. But thank you for the hospitality that you show us at NFPA. And just know that if you have questions, you don't have to go through a general customer service line. That's my job, is to work with you and the associations to be a catalyst for you to get answers. So thank you for what you do, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Sure. Okay. Anybody have any questions for NFPA? Right. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And while you're on NFPA, what I passed around was just the their proposed schedule for the consolidation. We talked about that a little bit yesterday, but wanted to have that.
Okay. Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts.
Morning. How are y'all doing? My name is Clay Avery. I'm the Assistant Executive Director of the Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, or SAFE-D as we like to be called for short, because that's a mouthful. We are the Association of ESDs, or Emergency Services Districts, in the state. In terms of our association, we were unable to have our February usual annual conference this year. Due to the pandemic originally, but it also turned out it was the week during Winter Storm Uri, so we kind of lucked out there. Instead, we are having a fall event in September in Fort Worth, September 16th through 18th. All are welcome, everyone. So we'd love to see you up there talking about ESD issues. In terms of association initiatives, we are currently working with other special district groups to try to allocate some of the ARPA funds, American Rescue Plan Act funds, to some of our ESDs who have sustained losses due to the pandemic and are eligible in some ways. Congress said that Congress allocated a lot of money to the state and then allocated a lot of money to counties and cities directly, but did not allocate any money to special districts. Despite the fact that they said special districts are eligible for some of this funding. So we're working with a coalition of water districts, hospital districts, some of the other stakeholders there to try to make that available for our ESDs who need it. Otherwise, I don't want to take up too much of your time this morning. You heard Chief Stevens talk about they created an ESD board position. The Fire Marshals Association has an ESD committee now. So as ESD, we're finding a lot more of creation inquiries here at SAFE-D about setting up and creating an ESD. So as ESDs kind of gain sort of notoriety, I guess, we want to continue to work as good partners, not only with the commission, but the fire service as a whole. Anything that we can do to be good partners at SAFE-D, we are more than delighted to do. So I'll answer any questions that the commission might have.
Okay. Anyone have any questions? Thank you. Up next is the Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Chan. I'm the current chair of the Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium, or the Texas CPSE Consortium. The consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development, especially through the Center for Public Safety Excellence's agency accreditation and professional credentialing programs. 12 departments in Texas have obtained accredited status, including 3 Department of Defense departments, and Houston's the most recent to receive its reaccreditation back in May. And there's also 88 individuals that have obtained chief fire officer designation. CIPSE consortium participants range from civilian analysts, administrative battalion chiefs, and fire chiefs from fire departments of all sizes across the state. The Center for Public Safety Excellence has been developing educational material in risk assessment, critical tasking, and strategic planning on its website through its CIPSE University program at CIPSE.org, a technical writing certification program for the fire service through a collaboration with George Mason University will also be offered starting in September 2021. The CIPSE Excellence Conference is scheduled for March 22 to 25th in Orlando. The application process for speakers is open through August 31st. I'm the chair of the planning committee, and Stuart Mars from College Station is also on the committee. One last bit of news is that NFPA 1022, standard for Fire Service Analyst Technical Specialist Professional Qualifications, or the Fire Analyst ProQuals draft, is expected to be released for public comment in early 2022. CIPSE CEO Preet Brassey is chairing the committee, and the others involved in CIPSE programs are on the committee, including Kevin Haynes of Frisco. I'll take any questions.
Okay. Any commissioners have any questions?
Thank you.
And up next is anyone from the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Good morning. I'm Orlando Hernandez. And I just have one update. Last month, we had a what we call SAW, Scientific Advisory Working Group, meeting for fire investigations. And we reviewed some cases, but at the end of the training meeting, we did some training for the changes that are the upcoming changes in 921 for fire investigations. So we recorded that training module, and we're going to be posting that here in the next month. We're doing some editing to the video, and so there'll be some training out there so that if you have fire investigators, they'll be able to go and see what the new changes are going to be in 921. And so our goal is to try to get that information out. We understand that there's folks that don't have money to go attend those trainings, so we can give that training for free. That's our goal. So we'll have that posted probably within the month. So that's my update. Any other questions?
Any questions for the State Fire Marshal? Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Okay.
Item 6, report from Commission Representative to the Homeland Security Council.
So we finally got to have a Homeland Security Council meeting June the 30th. We know, I mean, everybody in the room knows we have a border crisis going on, but to listen to DPS talk about that and what's going on down there and really go into depth about what's happening, I think there's some, and probably some of the guys in the fire service that are down in that area, there's probably some stuff we might want to look at in the future, and also like we were kind of talking about earlier, but the border crisis, the attack on the government website or the internet services and stuff like that. We talked about Senate Bill 475, and I know that's something we're probably on top of with our IT staff here. But the ways that they're getting into these and they're you know holding your agency ransom and getting your information is just amazing. So we just need to be prepared because what's happening in the world is, I mean, as you know, it's changing. But it was really interesting to see. There was a large group of people there. Representing all different agencies, so it was really good to see, but also scary in the same sense.
Okay. Any questions for Commissioner Vandegrift? Okay. Thank you for that report.
Item 7, report from the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee.
Thank you. So we'll keep it short as well. We have initiatives we're still working on, and one that we are presenting today, and we're excited about it. Would you like us to, you know, give a detail now or for agenda item 13?
We can wait when we get to the agenda.
For 13, that's okay. So right now I'll just give a brief introduction of what our agenda item that we're presenting today. It's the top injury CE agenda, and it's, as a public member, as I said last time, it's essential that the fire service does implement this agenda item for the health and wellness of all of our fire service industry. And this will help, you know, improve reporting, improve analyze our ability to analyze trends, and to increase the discussion for future areas that we can improve and reduce. Improve our injury reporting, reduce the injuries for our Texas Fire Service, and I have a lot of support from our members here today, and you'll hear from them soon, from Sugar Land Fire, from Houston Fire, McKinney Fire as well, so I really am happy that everyone is here. Dallas Fire as well, and you'll hear from Chief Mayor as well, who will add on to our discussion, let you know a little more detail of why this agenda item is important. And the main, it's on page 116. When we get to it, it's the 18 CE hours, two shall be the review of the most recent TCFP injury report with a focus on the top three leading causes of injuries during the reporting period. I can't emphasize enough as a public member that this is absolutely important to improve everything for the fire service industry from all levels. So thank you.
Thank you.
Item 8, subjects for future commission meeting agendas.
Do any of the commissioners have anything specific they would like to have added for a future meeting agenda? Commissioner Wilson.
I'd like to look at adding something regarding a system that would be similar to what TECO uses, and rather than me butcher it, I'm going to ask that Chief Stevens come up and explain this item so that we can look at putting it on a future agenda.
Thank you, Chief, for bringing that up. I would just like to ask the commission to put together a committee or however you see fit to explore adding a system similar to TCOL's F5. When you leave an agency within the state of Texas that's regulated by TCOL, the agency head is required to submit an F5 form to TCOL, and then subsequent employers have access to that. It's similar to those of you might be familiar with the DD-214 system the military uses. It's similar to that. It gives us an opportunity beyond just a routine background investigation, which we're learning quickly. A lot of agencies, that's one of the places when they have to make cuts, they don't fund thorough backgrounds. They don't have people who are able to visit other agencies and look at personnel records to find out if there were any kind of employment issues. And we wind up moving some of these employees from one agency to the next to the next. And this system would give us a chance through a registry at the state to know if someone left, for instance, San Marcos in good standing before the city of Fort Worth hired them. So I think this is something you're seeing the law enforcement communities getting beat up on, moving people from one agency to the other when they had a record of poor performance or behavioral issues. I think this is a good chance for us to be proactive and get around something like that. It's fairly straightforward. We're already entering new employees into FIDO. We're taking them out of FIDO at the termination of their employment, whether it's a retirement or resignation or otherwise. This would be one pretty simple form that others would have access to as they look to hire someone in the future.
Okay. Commissioners, I know this has been a topic for a couple of years now. My involvement with the Texas Fire Chiefs Association is their annual workshop. This is one of the things that really keeps coming back up and maybe getting a little momentum. So what I'd like to do is ask staff to maybe liaise with TCOL and maybe put us together a brief or an information packet that we could kind of process and analyze, and then we can come back with an agenda item in the next meeting to discuss and then see if it gets any traction and then possibly form the committee that you referenced.
Appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
you. Any other items? Yes, sir. Please step to the podium.
Good morning. My name is Woody Dunseith. I represent San Jacinto College down in the Pasadena area. Last meeting, I had asked to have item 12 added to today's agenda. And while I'll talk about something there, Chief Wisco and his staff held a regional meeting in Houston last Friday, and there were a number of questions that came up from people attending that about test development. So I'd like to, from our perspective, I asked the commission staff Monday for a couple of clarifications on some things that came out in that meeting. And so I would ask that, pending those answers, that we could talk about test development and validation processes at the next commission meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else?
I have one. From our last meeting on item 11, I've been contacted by about five different fire chiefs regarding specifically language for future meetings from our last meeting, so I wanted to find out if there's any updates on it regarding mandates for after action on May Days. Do we have any updates on if that's been worked on at all?
No, we have an agenda item for it today because it was okay. Asked for at the last meeting. So, yeah.
And you'll give a briefing out on that then?
I think Chief Kistner's here to talk about it. He made the request, and, okay. And we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. All right.
Item 9, future meeting dates.
I know our next meeting date is already established, and I believe that's as far out as we've gone, right, Deb? Just to confirm that with everybody, you want to remind me just without me having to go into my phone and look at it, just to make sure everybody's good with it?
October 28th.
Okay.
At
10 a.m. 10 a.m. meeting, October 28th. Anybody foresee any conflicts with that? And I'm sure on that day we will set the meetings for the next year, the next four meetings and workshops. Okay.
Item 10, matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to, A, possible final adoption of the proposed amendments as follows. Number 1, 37, Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 421, Standards for Certification.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Daniel DeYeer with the Dallas Fire Department, and I'm the chair of your advisory committee. We have several items here under number 10 to present to you. Under 10, letter A, number 1, Chapter 421, Standards for Certification. This was originated from staff, and I'm sure Director Wisco can expand upon that, but we ultimately approved this proposal and are sending it to you for yours. Questions about it at all?
Do you want to go through that again, or? You want me to just rehash while we're asking for this?
Yeah.
Again?
Can we turn the volume up?
I'm
having a hard time
hearing
even Daniel talking.
The windows.
I don't know if there's any adjustment we can make to
touch it, see if I don't blow it up.
Concrete truck.
Background noise is killing us up here.
I can't hear nothing.
Yeah, I know you guys probably have it bad over there by the window.
With our concrete trucks.
And now they stop.
Yeah.
They've been going off now.
What's that?
Yeah. Get IT to come in there and turn it up.
Okay. Blow everybody out of the room.
I don't want to be responsible for hearing damage. So just to rehash this, we had a couple of instances during 20 specific to COVID, and what we found was that there can be some extenuating circumstances sometimes that prevent somebody from renewing within the month of October. For an example, a hospitalization or something that just causes them to completely miss that period of time. And so the reason for this request was to have the ability here with staff, or at least with the executive director, situations like that, special circumstances that can't be controlled, we would have the ability just to approve it and move on, as opposed to telling them they can't recertify for some reason.
Commissioners, any questions or comments?
Are you waiving the certification for an extended
time? No, we're not waiving it. We're just, if they miss it and they can present some
reason,
you know, totally acceptable reason why they couldn't renew within that period of time, we'll look at allowing it.
You just extend it, but they still certify?
We just recertify them, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Case by case, based on your executive director.
Based on the information presented to us, okay. And we would document and track all of that. You know, so what happens is if Texas politics, if we tell somebody no, they'll get the guys down the street involved in it, and then we get all kind of pressure on us. There's extenuating circumstance, like you're in a hospital for a month and you completely miss it. They looked at me and said, you know, what's wrong with you? There's nothing wrong with me. Reading the rules, so I'm just asking for a little leeway there so we can take those situations and write them when they need to be.
I would agree with. I mean, I think it's a great idea. We're here to serve the Texas Fire Service.
Yep.
Okay. Any other discussion or comments?
The only thing I would ask is if, so that's subjective,
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Well, if they're told no, is there an appeal process for being
Yeah, I mean, they ultimately they would appeal it to the executive director, and so a lot of times with staff, when they get in a situation where we're headed to that, they bring me into it to try to resolve it before we have to go through an appeal process, because ultimately you end up having to bring in an administrative rules judge and things like that. So if there's a way to fix it before we get down that road and prevent a bunch of heartache and expense, then that's what we're trying to do here. So there was some, based on interpretation, 419 would allow it, but if you read our rule, the rule was pretty cut and dried what you could and couldn't do. The law is always going to trump the rules. I'm not necessarily comfortable with that personally, so I'm just looking for an avenue there to be able to make a very subjective judgment in some situations and do that. But it would involve managers or whatever division are involved to be part of it. It wouldn't be one, wouldn't just be my decision without a bunch of research.
Any other questions or comments? This is up for final adoption, so I'll entertain a motion.
So moved, Fletcher.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Number 10, matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to A, possible final adoption of the proposed amendments as follows. Item 2, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 435, Firefighter Safety.
So, Commissioners, this is an amendment to the rule that already exists. This also came out of staff, so I'm sure Executive Director Wisco can comment on that as well, but there's a deletion of some wording at the end of the second paragraph in B, and in front of you is the proposed replacement, and this was also discussed in our committee and approved and sent on to you for your approval.
This is to address the change in the inspection process based on a number of complaints and concerns over the years, and then with the sudden change in operations with COVID, we had to change our inspection process. We still meet the rule, but some would interpret that as a stretch, so I wanted to just clean up the language in there and allow the process, which is now initiated by an email and not just an impromptu show up at the door and we're here to inspect. We instituted this about 8 weeks after COVID when we returned to work and were able to start getting back out. Really, it was a measure to protect our staff and the firefighters out there when we go to do an inspection. But the feedback has been unbelievably positive about this. It's allowed departments an opportunity to be a little better prepared. The reality is if they're violating or they're not in compliance on something and they have been a long time, they're not going to fix that just because they get an email 2 weeks before the inspector shows up. But it gives the inspectors an opportunity to look at their documents and all before they get there and have more of an educational conversation and help them achieve and maintain compliance as opposed to showing up, catching them off guard, and they got to come back because they didn't have everything they needed.
Sure. Okay. Commissioners, any questions or comments? This is also up for final adoption, so with that, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Jones, second by Commissioner Coatney. Any other discussion or questions? If not, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Matter 10, matters referred to from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to B, report from the Curriculum Testing Committee regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. A, basic aircraft rescue fire suppression curriculum.
So, Commissioners, the next 50 pages of your agenda pretty much cover this item. This also came through our committee. The significant notes, if you look through there, are where the instructor notes have been inserted, and then I'm beginning on page 79. There are several revisions to the resources that were previously published. And that's several pages long on page 79, and that's basically just updating it to the current standards and requirements. And once again, our committee approved this and is forwarding it to you for your final adoption.
Make a motion to approve.
All right. Have a motion by Commissioner Jones to approve, seconded by Commissioner Hamilton. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
All right. Item 10, matters referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to B, report from the Curriculum Testing Committee regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. B, basic fire inspector curriculum.
So I'll apologize. I just covered A, B, and C all at the same time. So should have clarified that. I wasn't listening to Commissioner Jones when he read that. But we adopted this as one whole document. If you want to keep it separated out, I guess we can do that.
Go ahead and read C.
Yeah.
All right. Item 10, matter referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, including but not limited to B, report from the Curriculum Testing Committee regarding possible changes to the certification curriculum manual as follows. C, plans examiner curriculum. So, for the record, we have A, basic aircraft rescue fire suppression curriculum, B, basic fire inspector curriculum, and C, plans examiner curriculum.
Okay.
Make a motion to approve.
Have a motion approved by Commissioner Jones.
Second.
I'm sorry, who said that?
Second.
Have a second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other questions? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Daniel.
All right, item 11, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 435, Firefighter Safety regarding after-action reports for May Day events.
Chairman Stuhlman, Commissioners, my name is Danny Kistner, and I'm the fire chief for the City of McKinney. I'm also a life safety advocate for the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation and have been so since the inception of that program. First off, I would like to just publicly recognize Chief Wisco and his outreach for the DFW area, where he brought himself and staff and just made himself available to questions, comments, concerns regarding the Texas Commission, and it was a heck of an outreach example, and I just wanted to say, Mike, thank you for that. It was very well received, so we do appreciate your efforts. Second, I frequently appear before you and have for the last number of years speaking on life safety, firefighter life safety initiative number 9, and that's thoroughly investigate all firefighter fatalities, close calls, and injuries. And the thought being behind it, anything that is investigated and information shared as appropriate will help reduce firefighter injury and deaths in the long term. In doing so, I believe it was last year, Chief Wisco brought to my attention there is an administrative regulation located with NFPA standards that Texas has adopted requiring the use of NIMS. And in that, there's reference made to, there's kind of a pathway, regulatory pathway to incident safety officer, and then a requirement for an incident safety officer to conduct a post-incident analysis on firefighter injuries, et cetera. And he commented to me, he said, is that achieve what you're looking to achieve? And absolutely it does. And thank you, Mike, for bringing that to our attention. So my request here is kind of twofold. One is if we could find some way to publish that regulatory pathway, make it known to the fire service that this is something that is required, that would be helpful to make sure that these events are indeed regulated. Now, to be clear, I'm not professing that this information be shared with the entire fire service. I think what we're the achievement here is to make sure somebody has a serious injury or close call that the department, in whatever fashion that they feel appropriate, looks at what happened and then makes adjustments internally. So that was one request. The other is I don't think that regulation specifically mentions May Day. And I think back at the work the Health and Wellness Committee is doing, and the agenda item number 13 is such a tremendous step forward. It's incredible. So I wholeheartedly support item 13 when that comes up. But I think back on some of the other initiatives that the Health and Wellness Committee has been working on, that the Commission has at least demonstrated a support, at least in concept, and that would be for the cancer reporting, and had discussed at one time to even make cancer reporting mandatory, and I don't think it's possible with the HIPAA regulations, et cetera. But there was a desire to get that information out, and that's incredible. And to me, that's a huge step forward. And you've got an opportunity. You can do the same thing with Firefighter May Day. And I had a couple suggestions. One suggestion was maybe we make just simply the reporting so we can track the frequency of departments that experience a mayday, make that part of the injury reporting process. Consider that somebody experiencing a mayday, that is a critical incident stress, and it may have ramifications, PTS later. Now you got a method to track. And that's something that's tangible information, tangible data that we can track now. And so my request is that we have a mandatory May Day reporting requirement, not suggesting that a fire department share all its intimate information with the world, but rather a May Day occurs, it's reported, it's tracked, and that's step one, and we can use that. My suggestion is through the injury reporting program. And respectfully, commissioners, that's my presentation and request to you today.
Commissioners, any questions? Chief Kissner.
I have a couple questions.
Yes.
First for Chief, and then I think for Council also. On near-miss reports, you know, we don't track those, but on near-miss reports, you would capture things like maydays, and you capture a lot of other incidents as well, and I know some of that don't result in injury.
Yes.
But are near-miss specifically, much like the airline industry does, and then they track it. And you know, there's a number of departments that kind of do that internally, but they don't share it. I know my experience with maydays, and in particular maydays, but my experience with maydays and their after-action reports is, since most of that information is public documents and is discoverable, if we had that reported to the commission, then does that information become discoverable? So that's the question for council. And the reason I'm asking is because I think at about 50% of the chiefs, only I've talked to about a dozen chiefs about this particular topic, Chief, and about 50% of them are cautious about it because of the discoverable component of it, because in some cases there's grievous violations of their own policies, and they're not sure if they want to come out from a litigation perspective. Others of them are, hey, we'd rather have it out there. You know, the May Day we had in Dallas, we produced a video on it and put that out, and you can access that on YouTube so anyone can see the lessons learned. But even with that, we don't go into the nuances of some of the details regarding violations of policies. We were fortunate in that one, we didn't have any. But so I think for council, my question is, if anything is turned into the commission, does it become a public document?
Council's over there. You keep pointing to me.
Okay, well, that's right. Well, I know, but you had her on the phone. You had her on the phone the other day.
So. He said you slept in a Holiday Inn Express.
No, I didn't. I wish I would have. Somebody kept partying last night. And it wasn't me.
I won't be able to answer your question on the spot. Do you want to rephrase it just so I know what I need to look into?
So if we report anything that's reported to the commission from fire departments, whether it's injury report data, whether it's after-action information, is that discoverable by the public? Because the concern from some is that anything that's reported to the commission is a public domain document then.
Right. Well, that would be governed by the Public Information Act, so it would depend on if there was an exception or if the information was confidential by some law.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's subject-specific. So if you look at the May reports, you have to look to see if there is something that makes that accepted from the disclosure or confidential. So it would be specific to the type of information.
So unless it's identified as confidential going into it, then it would have to go to for OG review in all likelihood, right? Okay.
And Chief, to be clear, my request to you today, unless you want to modify that request, would be simply to report that a mayday occurred and not necessarily solicit the information.
Right. It's just what's written is the after action.
I see.
So after action reports versus notification of the mayday are two different components to it. And I'm supportive, to be quite honest with you, I'm supportive of both. That, you know, again, when 50% of the people I talk to have concerns about the after release of the after action report, then I need to bring it up for discussion at this point.
Sure, and I might suggest, too, that if a mayday experience in a line of duty death, that information be made public anyway.
Yes. have a question.
Commissioner Jones.
For Executive Director Wisco, so I don't know that that would fall into the, and that's what I was looking at, the statute of the injury reporting, because it's broken down by minor and for to the, what's reported through workers' comp.
Yeah, so it doesn't fit under the injury reporting, and I think maybe what Chief Kistner was referencing, just something similar to that. It would almost have to be we'd have to establish some kind of rule to require reporting, and we would have to set up some kind of system on through FIDO to make that possible, because statutorily we're extremely limited on the injury reporting, what we can even receive in placing our report for every year. So we'd have to come up with a whole different process to track it. And we got two different rules in 435 that reference 1561. It's part of 1561, so it could certainly be explored, and we could come up with a system. I don't know how long that would take to develop that. That's a matter of code writing and getting our IT guys involved. They'd have to come up with a reporting process for that. And then back to Commissioner Coatney's, you know, question or concern, how much do we want to get and what do we do with it? And, you know, the injury reports, anywhere we go with it, we redact the names and such. We don't have names per se. We're just getting the statistics, and none of those are put in the report. So it's got to be a way to work through that. It just takes some time to develop that.
So I'm just thinking out loud here, more or less. So as a possible starting place, if you were to include, because I'm thinking of my department's own first report of injury and starts the work comp paperwork, I know there are questions on there that are, were the policies followed, was all protective equipment in place, so forth, so on, that, you know, you're documenting yes or no on that, but connecting it back to the injury reporting, would it be something, could it be as simple, and I don't know if it would meet where Chief Kistner's going, but to have a checkbox, was this injury the result of a mayday? Check yes or no. I mean, it's just a threshold to start, and I realize there's a lot of injuries in my own department, I'll use it for the example, that have nothing to do with a fire ground or a mayday or even come close to that. It's checking the truck out in the apparatus bay, but would that be beneficial in any way and even possible just to add a checkbox on the injury reporting, was this up from a mayday? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Sure. No, honestly, I hadn't considered that. I think that would be a step in the right direction. Absolutely. But consider this, and this is why I'm trying to link it with the injury report, is largely they're pretty much the same year to year as far as what's causing injuries. Now, granted, there's some anomalies from year to year. I recall, I believe it was one year where some specific type burn injuries were seen because of problems with PPE. Tremendous value. And then there's tremendous value in understanding what's causing some of these injuries. But by and large, it's usually from working out at the fire station or something like that. And if you include something like a mayday, where you can observe the trending, you know, and now we're talking about later that we're going to require fire departments to talk about it, just think about the lessons learned or the information shared that could come from that. But I absolutely like that idea. So, yes, I hadn't even considered that thought.
I mean, that's certainly something I'd have to get with legal to make sure, but I'll caution you, not every mayday ends with an injury. So there'd be a lot that we would not capture that
right
way.
Right.
So I think at some point it's still going to have to be some kind of standalone collection of information.
I absolutely think there's value in reporting the maydays. I don't think enough of them reported, so we don't really have an idea of what's going on. I like the idea of having a requirement to complete an after-action report, but I don't know that the after-action report should be required to be shared with you know, the commission. The fact that you had a mayday, I think, should be the after-action. I think that would require further discussion, and I think we'd have to get out to a broader audience and see what the challenges for those internal organizations are amongst their own, you know, their legal ramifications for that. Because that was our biggest challenge. You know, we'd want to do good, solid after-action reports, and everybody was fearful of it coming out in public. But the reality is that's probably what's kept us from growing as a fire service, that fear. So
let me work with legal and I'll have a expansive report on this for the next meeting, and at the same time, that we'll continue to encourage folks to to attend and speak to their concerns like that as well. If we can open that dialogue right here and it's on the record and everybody's in the room, we might get a lot farther with this a little quicker. So let me work with legal a little bit and see what we can do. There's got to be some way to make this work. It benefits the fire service. So.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on you were talking about the post-traumatic stress of the deal. That close call, and I just investigated one in a volunteer service. But in to know that you were just close to dying is sometimes or many times is just as bad as when somebody does. And so we need to look in that because we've done a poor job of mental health in the fire service because we're usually too strong to say I have an issue with that. So if we force somebody to at least put that on a piece of paper, then somebody down the line might pick up and stop that future loss of whatever it is or that wherever they go with that stress. And so I think it's a great idea.
Well, and as Chief Kistner pointed out, you know, it creates a record of an event because so often workers' comp challenges, well, what's the record of that event happening? And here you can go back and cite to it.
So, that does sound like similar to the mental health initiative that we are working on as well, because that the mental health is important as well, for everyone in each level of the department to make sure that they're, it's not necessarily an injury, but it's something that we are working on with another course. So that I'm not sure if that's similar,
It was, and that was the link I was kind of going for. And to be honest, I'm still trying to research that among academia, and I'm trying to find that link between a critical incident and an actual declaration of an injury or a trauma. And so I'm still working kind of that angle, but I'm just not there yet. So.
And I think that's I know some departments, they do have a form for each, after each event, whether it's Mayday or not, that they report, have you been exposed to certain chemicals or, was this a line of duty death? I know it's not officially reported to the commission. So I think there would definitely need to be more hammering out with our legal counsel and to see what can be done. I think that's definitely necessary.
I just like to add, in my Air Force flying career, I saw, flying aircraft. There was obviously this big push to have safety and the loss of life prevented. And I went from a culture where you didn't want to self-report to a culture over my 20 years where the culture changed where you would report it because you knew there was no reprisals, no repercussions from doing that. You would share that information, but it was all the sensitive information was always redacted. But it was for that sense that you could put it out to the force and not try to replicate that mistake that was made, right? I think culturally, if we can convince the chiefs that there's no repercussions, nothing's coming back, that there's a system in place where you can accept that information legally with it not being shared for the good of all is good.
Okay. Any other comments? Questions for Chief Kistner? Okay.
I'll work with Danny and legal and some of the staff, and we'll see if we can't come up with something and bring it back in October.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you,
Chief.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Item 12, 37, Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 421, Standards for Certification Regarding Testing and Certification Requirements.
Hello again, Woody Dunseith, San Jacinto College. Today I want to talk to you mostly about the structure exam rating process. So prior to a change in 2017, just as a bit of background, students that took the structure test had to make a 70% score over all of the questions, even though the test was really divided into four different sections, Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2, Hazardous Materials Awareness, Hazmat Operations. January 1, 2017, the grading process was changed to where for a student to pass the structure exam, they had to make a 70 on each of those four sections. I personally supported that change. I thought you needed to pass all those four sections under the previous system. You could conceivably make 100 in three of the sections and like a zero in one of them. And so you're just not demonstrating competency in those sections. My fear at the time was that we simply, or the commission, simply was just not going to ask enough questions for hazardous materials operations in particular. It's a lot of material. So what happened? In our case, our pass rates plunged, right? As we talked to our colleagues at local colleges and departments, we saw the same thing. But how do you know that, right? So when you get your commissioner notebook, I mean, you can take my word for it. I want to demonstrate how you know that. When you get your commissioner's notebook, there's a report from staff on the last quarter's pass rates. And what it appears to me to be is the number of exams that were passed divided by the number of exams that were taken, and gives you just an overall high-level pass rate. And that's great, except when you remember that students taking the structure test, they're actually taking four co-requisite exams. They have to pass all four of those. So that overall pass rate is accurate. It's simply not precise enough, because it does not tell you, of the people taking the structure exam, how many of them are eligible for certification, right? So math is kind of tricky, right? So if you just split out the structure exam results and you had a 75% pass rate reported notebook style to the commission and around of 75%. I think a lot of the colleagues that were at the regional meeting in Houston would kill for a 75 first attempt pass rate. Funny thing is, though, with a 75% pass rate, you could actually have a 0% rate of certification. Every single one of those people could have passed or failed one of the section, and thereby nobody gets certified. So my first request is, let me come back to that. I have a handout here, and I'm not sure the process for getting handouts to y'all. It's the first time here. The handout is two different tables. The table on the left is just a breakdown of all the notebook pass rates that have been in the notebook since the 2017 change, and it counts up from 2017. On the right-hand side are the numbers for our classes. We run essentially three of fire academies per year, and so starting from the bottom of the chart, class 55, that was the first class that saw the change. You see that what I have labeled as the TCFP column. That's if we calculate the pass rate the same way that's reported to y'all and the same way that appears in the master reports. Number of sections that were passed divided by number of sections taken. That real column that I have there that's labeled real is what we consider our first attempt pass rate, meaning of the students that we had, what percentage of them passed all four sections on the structure exam. And you see those numbers are dismal. So we talk about not wanting to share bad information around. I've just given you our dismal pass rates. So our first request that I have for you today, or let me come back to that. So 1 through 54 are our classes. We start there with class 55. Classes 1 through 54, right up until that change, we had an overall pass rate for all those classes way back to 1992 of 96.13%. First attempt pass rate. For the classes 55 through 67, we have a pass rate, since everybody here doesn't have that chart, of 51.9%, meaning just slightly over half of our cadets, when they take that test the first time, pass all four sections, eligible to be certified. Now, do they do better on the retest? Yes, they do. But that's not what we're about. We want that first attempt pass rate because that's what they came to our college for. So the request, the numbers are horrible. I think we can all agree with that. One of the local colleges in the Houston area called the commission and asked who was doing well because their numbers were also horrible. They told that college that our college, San Jacinto College, was one of the institutions doing well. When you look at that number, that real column number, I don't think you can agree that we're doing well. We have to remember this is an entry-level certification. So I believe it is time to course correct. The state legislature environment for higher education is one focused on student success, removing academic barriers to entry into programs, reducing cost of the programs, getting them into the program, getting them out of the program successfully so they can enter the workforce. So that first request that I've highlighted about 5,000 times now inadvertently is for the commission staff to report to commissioners in the notebook numbers based on certification eligibility. Now, there's a number of ways you can do that, but one of the easiest ways is still report the number that you have right now, but then also break it down by certification. So fire officer one, X number of people took it, X number of people pass it, certification. The structure, X number of people took it, X number of people passed all four sections, and therefore we have an idea of how many people are getting certified. Now, that's great information broken down by exam for the training facilities, because we can see if there's a statewide issue that a lot of people are not doing well on fire officer two, and we aren't either, we can work together. Or if we have horrible numbers in fire officer two, but the statewide average is 20 points higher, we need to be calling around to find out what we're doing wrong in fire officer two, for example. I personally think that you should also break it down by first attempt, but that's mostly helpful for the facility. So once you look at those numbers and you see statewide what number or what percentage of people that start a structure academy actually are eligible for certification after taking that structure test, I'm inclined to believe, based on conversations, that we'll see that that number is awfully low for what is the entry-level exam to get into the profession, lower than you would probably find acceptable. So how do you fix that? So in discussion with a lot of the colleagues in the Houston area, we think the easiest solution is to remove operations from the basic structure certification. Distribute the remaining questions over firefighter two and awareness. Just take operations out of the equation. It's not required anyway. The commission has in the past added things that everybody had to do, courage to be safe, the traffic course, for example. Not, if I'm not mistaken, and I may be, not every firefighter had to go back that didn't already have operations and go back and get operations. Nothing would prevent any jurisdiction from requiring their folks from getting operations if that's what they needed to serve their community the best. An alternative to that would just be to increase the number of the questions on the operation portion of the exam. Right now it's 25 questions. So it's a lot of material for 25 questions. And talking to our colleagues, a lot of the folks that fail that section fail it with the 68. Now, 2 years ago, a number of people met with the commission and testing committee or curriculum and testing committee, and there was a lot of good talk about the length of time that exam would require if you increase the number of questions. And as I hinted at or alluded to earlier on the agenda item for the next meeting, we in the Houston area had a lot of issues with just question development in general. And so we don't find, for the people that we talked with and from San Jacinto College's perspective, just adding more questions is not the solution. Removing operations is the solution. The third request, and this is a simple one, as you discuss this, which I hope you will, please keep in mind, in Texas, the training facilities and the fire commission are in a full partnership. Thanks to a very cruel variation of the whole voluntold type of deal, I found myself in charge of all of our health sciences programs except for nursing for a period of time. Most of those agencies, there's a different agency that regulates the training program, the accreditation for the program, and there's a different agency that handles the certification and the testing. And in some cases, there's three different ones that handle all three of those components. For the fire training facilities in Texas, it's all with the fire commission. So when you see that real pass rate, we didn't get horrible around the state January 2017 as instructors, not at San Jacinto College, not anywhere else. So when you look at those, that real column of numbers, keep in mind that these courses are taught by Fire Commission-approved instructors in Fire Commission-approved training facilities using Fire Commission-approved curriculum. The Fire Commission entrusts the training facilities to do all of the skill testing, and I think we will agree that the entry-level structure test is skills-intensive. And before a student can even take the commission exam for structure, they have to pass through the academy making a 70 comprehensive final exam, at least in our case, on all four of those sectional areas. So they're making it through our program, even though we're certified across the board for the commission, and just over half are eligible or able to pass all four sections on that structure exam. I thank you for your kind attention. I'll entertain or answer, hopefully, any questions you may have.
Commissioners, any questions or comments?
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you.
Done a little research. Not disagreeing at all with anything Woody just said. However, there was a report, an internal report done in 2019 to compare hazmat awareness and operations failure rates prior to the change in 17 and after the change in 17. What you'll find, this report was run internally, and I haven't run one to date. I got my hands on this late last week. Before 2017, when we broke it out into four parts that you had to pass, the pass rates for the awareness section were anywhere from 80 to 87%. And that's looking all the way back to 2010. After 2017, the pass rate for awareness remained in that same 80 to 87% bracket. So when you talk about operations, big difference on the operations side. From 2010 to 2019, there was an overall scale from 65 to 79%. But before 17 and after 17, that scale doesn't change. If anything, it does stay closer to the lower end of that scale, but there was no drastic increase. It never got below 65%. That's not disputing anything he's saying. I think it's valid. It's something to look at. I think as firefighters, we would all agree that when you get into hazardous material operations, you're not doing a whole lot by the seat of your pants or based on your experience and your training. You're referring to reference guides, manuals, things of that nature, talking to the companies, looking at MSDS sheets. So to have a written exam and to have questions for operation-level things, it tends to prove to me you have to be more of a technician level to be able to successfully answer some of those questions. Maybe operational-type issues need to be more of a practical skill versus a written testing model. All that said, I think it's something we need to look at. I think we need to involve the curriculum and testing folks. I think we need to involve IFSAC. You start getting into a lot of different pieces when you start looking at changing the test and how we're going to do it. But it's certainly a valid point, and it's something we need to take a look at moving forward.
Do we have the ability, or does it even matter, to drill down into the actual hazmat operations piece? And is there a common thread that everybody does poorly with out of the question options? You know, there's so many that cover this piece of it and so many for this piece. Is there just one or two of those that everybody just tanks on every time?
Lucky for you, there's people here smarter than me that might be able to answer that. And I look at Cliff Grant behind you, or even Pat McAuliffe, and I'll let them answer that.
All right, Pat. You had the floor.
So I'm Pat McAuliffe with Collin College. I'm the chairman of the Curriculum and Testing Committee. And a lot of what I heard, there is a lot of truth to it. If you have some extra time, go back to the tapes back in 2017, and I stood here in front of this commission and said, your pass rates are going to fall. They're going to fall. But everybody agreed, just as he indicated, that that was the right thing to do, that if you're going to award a certification from a state agency, then we need to make sure that all points have been covered.
We wanted the package. That was, I remember that being the big topic in the conversation back then. We wanted that complete package of that fire, that hireable firefighter, right?
Exactly. So over the years, and we, our program, we suffered some failures too. I will share this information because it worked for us. One of the things that I did was I changed my instructor. I had a very skilled hazmat technician that was teaching the class, and the new test, or when we made the shift, what we saw was he was over-teaching the material. Now, that may be hard to understand, but that's exactly what was going on. That individual was sharing that information based on his high level of knowledge and competence, and the questions weren't written at that level. They were written at a much lower level. So students were trying to overthink the questions, and therefore they were getting them wrong. I changed that. I took him off, put in another person who taught at that level. My scores started going up. The next thing I did was we moved the hazmat training section of our academy towards the end of the program, so that all the hazmat information was much fresher in their mind than what it was, or then when they went to take the state test, it was very fresh. That also helped increase our test scores. The other thing that we did was, and I have a very large pool of part-time instructors and skills instructors, and inevitably there was always condescending talk about hazmat. You know, take a poll of any firefighter you want to, and there's always going to be a high percentage that are kind of scoff at the idea of hazmat for whatever reason. They're going to dismiss it to some degree. And even little things like they would mention comments to the students in the hallway about, oh, yeah, that hazmat, that's just so hard. Or, oh, yeah, that hazmat, you'll never need that. I mean, those kind of negative comments do impact a student in how they prepare and how they study. Then, to his point, and he's correct, there's not a lot of questions. There's not a lot of room for you to miss much in hazmat. So I think when you have instructors telling students that some of that stuff's not important, then what do? They don't study. And then when you have just a handful of questions, they don't do well on the test. So I'm mentioning all this because it's not always just a problem with the test, okay? There are many other factors, and I wanted all the members of the commission to be aware of that. I do agree that the number of questions is probably inappropriate for you got to pass it all, y'all. That was kind of the expression that you guys might remember. You got to pass all four sections. With that, there was discussion about splitting it out. You know, why don't we take four tests? If you're going to have four certifications, four IFSAC seals, if you will, why don't we take four tests? Well, somebody quickly did the math on the cost of a test times four, and all of a sudden it got unwieldy and out of control. So one solution might be to go back and readdress how we charge for that. Could we package a different type of test? Maybe the test isn't given all at one setting. Maybe we do it in increments. I mentioned that, and then it was like, well, we don't have staff to quadruple our test. We can't handle that test volume. So I think there are answers, but I think we're going to have some open ideas as to how we can address that. But I just feel that it's important that we don't get hung up on the problem is the test. The problem is not always just the test. And if you water a test down so much that everyone passes and your pass rates look wonderful, what are you really doing to that individual that you're putting out on the line? Are you really preparing them if you're giving them something that's very easily passable? I don't think so. That's not what I'm about, and that's not what I've been about in all of my career of training in the fire service. We train for a reason. We train to make sure that our firefighters do the right thing, take care of the issue, and be safe while they're doing it. that's where we need to focus on. I don't think watering down a test is the answer. As far as removing operations, I'm not real sure we need to do that either. I'd be more inclined to say, let's break apart the test, be a little more thorough in our training, and a little offer more opportunities to answer more questions. So if you miss a few, it isn't going to kill you, so to speak. And I think his point was well made too. A lot of the failures are 68s. You know, they're just under the mark. If you increase the number of test questions, then I think we would probably see much higher pass rates. The problem there is now you've got a test that's huge. Who wants to sit for a 4- and 5-hour test? Nobody wants to do that. So this is not something that we haven't looked at, but it just seems to be working. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but I don't think the expectation is that every single firefighter and every single program should pass on the first attempt. I think if that's your expectation, I'm not seeing a lot of rigor in our program if we do that. And I'm not targeting the traditional bell curve either. I know in education that's always kind of a nice little model they like to follow. I'm not hell-bent on that we have to follow that model, but I for sure don't want to see us water down our testing process such that everybody passes every time on the first attempt. His comments about the mastery report, the way that you go in and look at your stats, I think there's room for improvement there. But that's all really more of an IT issue than anything. But there is room for improvement there. Sometimes I get bogged down and like, how do I really track all of this information? The information is good, but I think it could be more beneficial to the training providers, as he indicated. So is there work, or should there work be done? Yeah, probably so. But I don't think just removing operations is the answer by any means. I really would oppose that. Now, I'll be happy to answer any other questions that anyone has.
We have commissioners, any questions, comments? Mr. Law.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, and please forgive me if I'm ignorant in this particular area here, but and I was talking to one of our chiefs in the area that I'm in, and as it relates to hazmat, you know, hazmat operations and what have you, where is it that we allow field evaluation competencies from the department, like the officers there in that department? At what level do we say that a firefighter is competent there as it relates to the hazmat side of things? How does that fit in with the online training, if you will, and the evaluation itself, like if you're doing drills and exercises and that kind of thing? So how are we working that into the mix of hazmat training?
Well, part of the state exam includes skill evaluation, and those skills are randomly selected, and they are sent to the training provider just before the date that the skill is to occur. When you submit for course approval, you have to tell the commission when you are going to do the skills so that commission staff can audit those skills if they choose to do so. The skills then are evaluated by those who are certified in that field and also who hold a field examiner qualification. The field examiner qualification is simply a reminder about the process of how do you observe a skill and things to look for, not technically, but generally. Things like going over topics like leniency, there's an official academic term I forgot about. I call it the just like me syndrome. In other words, you don't want someone who's high quality evaluating someone who's just learning and expect that level of performance from this type of person. So there's a lot of information in that to help those skills evaluators. They are the ones who check it off. Go back in history. The fire commission used to send out a staff representative to come make sure that you were doing your skills. The staff person was not actually checking them off, but that person was at your facility on a given day observing everything. And when we had budget crisis, that went out the window. And all of a sudden, all of this skills verification got dumped right back onto the training providers. And that was just what his point was earlier. We're doing all the legwork. We're paying the money for the state test, and I'm paying my guys to do the state test. I didn't have to use to do that. I paid my fee. You sent out a person to come test. I had my guys there, but there was a true third party. And that's what we need in order to have our IFSAC accreditation. We need that third party, someone who didn't actually teach the material but can come in and evaluate it. So just if you're not familiar with the process, if you're teaching the subject directly, you cannot skill evaluate that same subject. So we got to bring in somebody else to do that. And that helps us with meet our IFSAC criteria. I don't know if I answered your question or confused you or just no, granted. I don't know which.
When I came in, but no, you did. You did. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, commissioners, any other questions for Pat? Any other comments in general to the topic?
I think the only thing I would add is that the numbers that Mr. Dunseth referenced earlier with his handout, those are the performance measure numbers that we're required by the LBB to report. If we need to provide a separate report breaking out all those exams each quarter, it would be a little additional work, but we could do that. But what we're reporting is based on what we're required to do legislatively, and those are the numbers you get. So they only require the broad brush of that. If you want more detail, we can figure out how to accomplish that and make it part of your notebook every time. But take just more time on the same people that are overworked right now. So,
commissioners, any other thoughts?
No. So, Mr. Chairman, would this be something we would want to put on the next agenda meeting item, maybe to discuss further in, or it, not? I mean, just.
Well, no. I certainly think we've kind of pulled a scab off of something that we need to probably revisit, and if that has to be some work between staff and curriculum and testing, maybe there's any other direction to head really on that at this point. I mean, just explore it a little bit further.
Yeah, we're going to have to explore it. I think it would be more than safe and appropriate to have this agenda item coupled with, I believe it's going to be 439 for his other request to talk about the actual testing process. Right. We could put those on there together and have a broad conversation. But we'll have to start with staff and the curriculum and testing folks just taking a look at this and bring something to that next meeting.
Okay.
We're not going to fix this in 3 months or in one meeting, but like you said, we pulled the scab off now. Let's jump in there and see what we can do.
Right. Okay. All right, on this item. Any other thoughts or comments? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm Lori Christensen. I'm the Harris County Fire Marshal. Thank you for letting me come up here. Just listening to this today, I would like to just make a few comments. As having one of the largest hazmat teams in the state combined with some of our 13-county partners, one of the things that I heard really concerned me when we talked about hazmat and in the instruction, again, I know a couple people have already said hazmat is on every scene, right? We send our hazmat truck to every fire investigation because it's a hazardous materials scene. That's what this cancer initiative is about. So when we talk about breaking these tests out and maybe some of these things aren't different, I would like to ask that consideration be given to let's review the curriculum. Because a concern I have, and I teach at a college level myself, and the concern I've got is we're not just trying to pass students through an online, through a college program, through an academy, to pass a state test. We're teaching them to save their lives, the public's lives, and to ensure they have those hands-on vocational skills. Let's not forget, most of us that started in this, I did it because I wasn't that great in college, but I was really good at some vocational skills. And then through the years, I realized that I needed to know the science. I needed to know the hazardous materials. I needed to understand why the friction loss was important. And if we're not really honing in on our curriculum before we start talking about breaking out tests and what we should and shouldn't be doing, that's my concern. We're teaching that next generation. Many of us learned without the electronics, without those capabilities. So I would challenge us to look at our curriculum. Let's look at how we're requiring our instructors to be certified as instructors. Are we doing that in a manner that is what's building this fire service up to be competitive? When people come work for me, their certification's a great piece of paper, and I tell them, go hang that on the wall. But if you don't complete the task book and show that you meet every competency within the curriculum that supposedly you passed that test for, you're not going to work here. And we have had people that unfortunately couldn't pass that task book. And that is in every certification level that they're required to hire for, only because I want to make sure every day they go out to work, they know the safety protocols, they go home at night to their family, and when they arrive on a scene, they're doing the best public service skill that they can do, and they've been trained properly. So that's nothing against any academy they went to. That is strictly for their protection and everybody else's. So I would just like to ask, if nothing else, let's look at the curriculum as well. And thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, commissioners, anything else on this topic? Yes, sir.
Just real quickly, wanted to respond to Chief Wisco and Mr. McAuliffe. I appreciate that info from Chief Wisco, because that was something I was very curious about. What was the pass rate on operations in particular prior to the change? And that certainly demonstrates why that change was made. All those, but what he was kind of getting at, that's kind of apples and oranges. Yeah, the rate at which somebody passes operations pre-2017, after 2017, didn't really change. What changed is what it took for you to get certified to be a firefighter in the state of Texas. And on the watering down of the exam, and I know he's not claiming that we're watering down our exam, we've tried everything that Collin County has tried as well. We shifted our hours around. We moved the topics. We split them up. We did the same thing. We had a hazmat tech with Houston's hazmat team teaching the courses previously, pulled him out, put somebody in that teaches a little bit more on the student's level, let's say. And in this, the cohort we just started in June, we actually put in four training. We didn't think we were running an academy. We put in four training prior approvals to do them separately. So they had nothing but awareness, they took the test. They had nothing but operations, they took the test. We're in Firefighter 1 now. We saw a slight increase in operations, just a very small increase, where all they had to do was focus in on operations. I'll talk about the testing next week, but I don't think testing per se is the problem. I don't think that having to pass all four is the problem. Problem is we don't have enough people coming out of these commission-approved academies being eligible to be a firefighter because they can't fulfill the requirements. I agree with everything everybody has said. I'm not morally opposed to leaving operations in there and just increasing the questions, but we have some work to do, as Chief Wisco may reinforce or may not from the regional meeting in Houston, that a lot of people have issues with the number of the questions as well. Pardon the pun, but we've given it the old college try for the past 4 years. We like to think we've done a pretty decent job across the history of our academy. Our mission at San Jacinto College is we make firefighters. That's the mission of our program. What we want them to do and what that means to us is when they come out of our program, they can operate safely and relatively efficiently their first day on the job, with the expectation that they know they have a lot more to learn. We're not watering down anything. All our adjuncts, we have a massive pool of adjuncts like everybody else. They're riding the trucks with the people that graduate from our academy, just like everybody else in here. It's not about watering it down. Y'all approve us to teach it. If you think you're watering it down or another college is watering it down, that's where the training audits and compliance inspections come in. But I don't think that's the case across the board. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, Commissioners, any other comments? So we'll ask staff to take a deeper look into this and bring us back some information for our next meeting. All right, with that, we're at a good stopping place. I'd like to take a brief recess. We will reconvene at 11 o'clock. Please turn off your microphone.
Ops is a requirement. It's not something that we can just not do.
Right. Well, so, and that's what...
It's 11:05 a.m. and the Texas Commission on Fire Protection is called back from recess. And we were at item 13 on the agenda.
All right, item 13. 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 441, Continuing Education Regarding Review of Latest TCFP Injury Report.
First of all, I wanted to thank the entire Health and Wellness Committee and the staff of Texas Commission on Fire Protection for working to get this agenda item on up in today, because it's essential and absolutely necessary. And thank you so much, Director Wisco and staff, and Chief Mayor from Houston Fire Department. Thank you so much for making it out here to help us explain this in a little more detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Sharma. I'd also like to thank fellow committee members who were present today, Chiefs DeYeer, Kistner, Bokener, a few others who are absent who have worked on this, as well as many other great things that our ad hoc committee is working on. My name is Michael Meir, Assistant Chief, Emergency Response with the Houston Fire Department. And today I'd like for the commission to consider approving an amendment to Texas Administrative Code Title 37, Part 13, Chapter 441, Rule 5, which covers continuing education requirements. We'd like for you to consider for a final adoption at the October meeting. The amendment is on page 116 in your agenda, and it reads, of the 18 hours, 2 hours shall be a review of the most recent TCFP injury report with a focus on the top three leading causes of injuries during the reporting period. Again, we'd like for you to consider this and recommend it for publication. Texas Administrative Code 37.13.435 requires all fire departments, while encouraging volunteer departments, to report workers' comp reportable injuries that occur on duty to the commission. We believe the spirit of this administrative code is to improve firefighter safety through the development of recommendations and training. In fact, I quote TCFP in saying, the goal of the injury reporting program is to help the Texas Fire Service community identify common injuries and learn how to prevent them. How do we improve safety if the injury report and the subsequent recommendations are not required for review? This rule change creates a mechanism for the commission to make firefighter safety a priority. The Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee did not intend to stray from the commission's existing reporting system. The CE is focused on the top three injuries reported to the commission. This rule change, in fact, is a strong complement to the outcomes hoped for in the injury report, such as identify needed training, evaluate and find improvements in procedures, just to name a few. It truly places health and wellness as a priority to Texas fire departments and nearly completes the process in injury prevention. The committee intended to keep the language simple, hence direct language in a single sentence. Simple language furthers our goal of having everyone read the TCFP injury report without the need for clarification. One way to understand the risk that firefighters face is to examine the number of fire ground injuries that occur for every 100 fires they attend. This is an NFPA recommendation, also required by the commission. The NIOSH reporting system and other like reporting systems work. Many departments study these reports and create training modules based on these incidents. The IFF's Firefighter Survival Program is an example, as is NIST's Modern Fire Dynamics. Because of these programs, firefighter casualties is trending downward. However, the decline in non-fatal injuries has been slower, as reported by NFPA, the United States Fire Administration, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Another reason to require departments to review injury data through continuing education. However, the impact or the return on the investment in your decision goes beyond altruistic principles. The U.S. Department of Commerce estimates the annual cost of firefighter injuries to range between $1.6 billion to $5.9 billion. Yet the committee believes that this rule Let me back up. I expressed the cost of the firefighter injuries. One of the greatest benefits to our recommendation is that there is no financial impact in your decision in requiring the 2-hour CE within the 18. There is no cost to fire departments that we estimate. We also believe this rule will improve reporting and reducing injuries, thereby making the injury reports better each year and reducing the economic impact to departments and communities. These points may seem a bit too detailed for what some may consider a simple rule change, but we describe these points for the commission to look beyond the surface and consider the tangible value of such a simple rule change. We ask you to consider the 2-hour requirement as a step toward making firefighter safety, wellness, and injury prevention a priority in Texas fire departments. I thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. I'm willing to answer any questions or discuss items you feel worthy.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you. Any comments?
I think it's great. I think it's something that's overdue, and it would be of high value. You know, we've talked about requiring firefighters to read line-of-duty death reports. We've talked about looking at injury trends to be able to identify common threads in those injury trends, and then putting CE together to make sure they prevent that. So this is certainly a move in the right direction. So I applaud it. I applaud your committee. And also, Commissioner, thank you very much for taking charge of that.
Commissioners, any other thoughts or comments?
I have one. I agree. I think it's really good, and I agree. Bring it back in October, and maybe we can get on the firefighter advisory agenda in September and get some comments from there. I agree. I think it's good.
Okay. And so Chief Kissman.
I just wanted to thank Chief Mayor for his presentation. Excellent representation of what we discussed in the committee. But and I also wanted to, Chief Stillman, to your point and trying to increase the reporting mechanism. This will bring an awareness to fire departments across the state of Texas that this program does indeed exist, and hopefully it would improve reporting.
So. Sure. Thank you. Okay. Commissioners, any other thoughts or comments? All right. This is up for publication, so I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Vandegrift and a second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
All right, item 14, request from the Texas A&M Forest Service for a possible rule amendment to 37 Texas Administrative Code, Part 13, Chapter 455, Minimum Standards for Wildland Fire Protection Certification regarding online wildland training.
So I'm here at the right time this time, right? Once again, I'm Guy Duncan with the Texas A&M Forest Service. I coordinate the TIFMAS program along with other programs that deal with state and municipal fire departments and volunteer fire departments. What we've been asked to do is to give a little history on this. Steve Pollack presented to the commission some years back about not accepting the online training due to not being able to verify the instructors and know and having a test. Moving forward, in 2019, we were kind of tasked with the TIFMA stakeholders how to better serve the fire departments in the state. By doing this, we feel like the online training will serve the best by reducing the cost. As I said earlier, it's about $1,000 to send a firefighter in person to in-person training is about $1,000 per person for a 5-day training with the backfill and the overtime and hotel cost. With this, they can do the training online at their leisure, and then once the training is complete, they can come have a field day and an in-person test, and the instructors will be vetted by the Forest Service. They'll submit a roster beforehand. So everybody's vetted, the instructors are vetted, the test, they'll have an in-person test, and then they'll have a field day, and we feel like that'll better serve the citizens. And we are accepting it, so now we're asking that the TCFP will accept that as well. Any questions on that or any backstory?
Okay. Commissioners, any questions for Mr. Duncan?
Chief Duncan, I know one of the issues previously when this was brought up was monitoring of the test of the students themselves, monitoring logins, monitoring who's actually, is it John Q. Firefighter behind that screen actually taking that? Has those steps been taken and put in place?
Well, to correct that is the in-person test. He's going to have to learn that material because in person, when we have that test in person, he will do that. So the online where somebody can actually watch them do that and see what they're doing, no, we're going to leave that up to that fire chief and that lead instructor to make sure that their people are doing the right things.
And so the instructor in the final test is the
yes, sir.
Yeah, the final qualification test, of their training.
Yes, sir. The final test and the field day will be that verification that they actually learn the material.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
All right. So this would be for publication, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, following the same suit since we're dealing with curriculum. Is this something maybe we should have the testing curriculum committee look at for the next meeting?
Mr. Chairman, if I can, I think what would be best, I can work with Guy and staff. We can tweak the language in 455 here and present it in October as proposed new language now that we've heard the request. And if everybody supports that, we'll put the document together and have it here in October as a proposed change.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Duncan? Okay.
Appreciate y'all.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Guy.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Cliff Grant. I'm the certifications manager and professional development manager for TCFP. I just want to make some clarifications for the statement that the gentleman just made. And I think it's a great idea that they would conduct a test for people coming in to do the skills and stuff like that. But TCFP has always accepted the online portion of S-130, 190, L-180, and I-100. The only time that we did not accept it is when they only submitted those online training certificates. They had to submit the fire in the field. I think it's FT-101 now. They had to submit the FT-101 certificate along with those online, and they were issued a qualification number based off of those skills completion. And then they could go to a training facility and do the basic wildland skills, complete those, and then sit for the certification exam. The extra step of requiring them to do the test when they come in before they take the skills, I think, is a great idea. But I just wanted to clarify that we do accept the online portion, but it has to include the fire in the field.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. Commissioners, any other thoughts?
So there is two things. There's fire in the field, which is a CD-based program, and then there's the online by NFA. And so we're asking that the online NFA portion of the test be acceptable. And looking forward to working with Chief Wisco and making this move forward.
Thank you.
Commissioners, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Nicholas Teague. I'm the EMS Program Director and Fire Chief of Texas Public Safety Training Academy. I wanted to raise a point about some of the things mentioned here. We run online and in-person training programs on the volunteer side, and we run in-person training programs with commission. If there is a rule change, the one statement I would like to make, and I think most other training providers in here would agree, is that it not be exclusive to the Texas Forestry Service, that all training providers would be permitted to do the online portion of this so as not to create a monopoly. Separately, I heard one of the gentlemen up here mention how would training hours be tracked online. We have, and I'm sure other training facilities have, systems that have designs, algorithms that prevent students from moving forward without satisfying certain objective requirements as well as time requirements. And before a automated certificate is generated, typically a setting can be placed in just about every system, whether you use Moodle or another platform, to meet a certain time threshold and a certain score threshold. So those mechanisms are easily satisfiable. Does anyone have any questions of me? That's all I've got.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate appreciate that. Good point. I just wanted to clarify something that he said, is that the Forest Service doesn't have a NOPI on it. Anybody can teach it if they're qualified to teach it, right? So they would, and this is a very good point, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that they would submit an application to proceed by teaching the class. We go back and vet that the instructors are qualified to do that. And that goes back into tying everything in to making sure that it's a fit, qualified, and backed up certified class.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions, comments? Okay. So if I understand, staff's going to create something to bring back to our next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So really no need for any action at this point. We're just going to.
Right.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Moving on.
All right, item 15, review of 2020 data collected regarding firefighter injuries and the development of recommendations to be submitted to the State Fire Marshal's Office for inclusion in its annual report.
Good morning, Commissioners. Grace Wilson here. I'm the Public Information Manager for the Texas Commission on Fire Protection, and I'm here to talk about the injury report with you again. We talked about it a little bit at the last meeting, and the Firefighter Advisory Committee has reviewed it as well. We've also been talking about it a lot at the regional meetings we've been to. And so before we get to the recommendations, does anybody have anything they'd like to discuss about the report itself? Any questions or comments about anything? Well, I passed out earlier this morning, you should have one on your desk, a piece of paper that says recommendations on the injury report. And it's just a list for your information about what was suggested from the Firefighter Advisory Committee. And so what we need for you today are recommendations for the fire service to include with our report that we submit to the fire marshal's office.
Commissioners, comments?
Also, I'll just let you know, at the back of the report, in your notebook, so starting on page 156, those are the recommendations for the fire service from last year. So just to give you some idea of the kinds of things that we're looking for. And it's really up to you.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I would ask is if the members of the audience have this piece of paper, or if not, if we could read the components out loud so they know what we're discussing and considering.
I'm not sure. Was this made available at the front?
No, it was not.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and read it if that's okay.
Okay.
Sure. Recommendations and requests for the report. And this is all coming from the Firefighter Advisory Committee. Number one, acknowledge with a notation everywhere COVID-19 has skewed the numbers. Number two, add a new exposure type, contact with a contagious coworker. Number three, add a new injury type, roadway injuries. Number four, from here forward, the report should always look the same. Number five, add a new table or chart that breaks down injuries from station duties. Number six, Table 8, types of injuries. Break down the whole chart further so one can see what people were doing that caused their injuries. And then I put a note next to it so you could see a little bit of that information. It says, see Table 9, top 15 tasks at time of injury. Now, those were the Firefighter Advisory Committee's recommendations and requests for the report itself, like for me, basically, to make the report better. The next thing I'm going to read, these are recommendations for the fire service. And these are the things that would be included in the report itself that would go to the fire marshal's office. Okay, so recommendations for the fire service. Number one, reporting should be mandatory. Number two, Departments need to revisit their SOPs for station duties if people continue to get injured. Do they need new SOPs? Number three, in the 2019 injury report, the Health and Wellness Committee recommended firefighters consider early detection testing. Can they be more specific? Which tests are we recommending? Number four, a reminder to follow NFPA 1851. And number five, in the 2019 injury report, the Health and Wellness Committee recommended the fire service should, quote, increase cancer reporting and prevention activities, end quote, including clean everything often. We recommend changing the wording to be more specific. Quote, clean everything often. For example, self-decon, clean cab, tools, equipment, PPE, etc.
Okay. Thanks for reading those.
Sure.
All right. Commissioners, happy to hear your thoughts and have some discussion.
Well, for the 2019 injury report, I know the Health and Wellness Committee and Chief Boyker from Sugarland did do a lot of extensive digging through all the data, but it is definitely important to make it more clear and more specific. So, Grace, when she's putting all of this together, it's more accurate and can help improve everything. So anything that can make it more detailed, such as the line item drop down, which was recommended, that would help. Could be small changes like that. Thank you, Grace.
Okay. Any other thoughts, concern from staff? I know he's in a conversation.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. No, we're just wondering, are there any concerns from staff with any of this?
No, I think, as always, Grace does a great job with this. She works every year to try to refine this thing and get it more and more in line with the previous year. Like you said, we should be starting to see a common thread. I think the earlier requirement to have people spend a couple hours every year looking at this and looking at the key injuries is a huge win for the fire service. I guess the only thing I would point out is, for as much as the Texas Fire Service beats up the commission, in particular over 1851, if you look at this injury report, and anybody that reads it will see, our fire ground injuries were at 9%. It's more dangerous to be in a fire station right now than it is to go to a fire in the state of Texas. And I think that speaks volumes about what we've managed to do through 1851 and through the other requirements that we have here. It's not perfect yet. We'd love to get to zero. I don't think that'll ever happen. It's still a dangerous job. But the educational value that's in this report is going to go a long way in the future. If this is approved today, we're ready to package it up and get it over to the State Fire Marshal's Office to meet our reporting requirement. The past few years, there were some issues on the State Fire Marshal's side that they brought forward that this report wasn't being included. That's been corrected, and so we'll start seeing that. And I appreciate the State Fire Marshal for correcting that problem. But outside of that, no comments or concerns from staff here.
Okay. Anything from any other commissioners?
Great job, Grace, as always.
Absolutely. Okay. I guess we need to take action to approve.
Yeah, this is up for this is actually final adoption this time around, basically, because our reporting timeline is September 1.
So. Yep. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move to adopt.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Smith, second by Commissioner Hamilton. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Thank you, Grace.
Thank you, Grace. All right, item 16. Advisory committees, including but not limited to committee makeup, term limits, and meeting requirements.
Bingo. Commissioners, you can I'm not going to read all these reports to you. You can see it, but I do want to highlight a couple things on a couple pages of it. The first page, training approval and testing section. Look at that unbelievable number of tests or exams given in the last quarter. That's in the quarter. It's over 7,000.
We're on 16.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dad, God Duncan, rubbing off on me. I've got ahead of myself. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel here. Let me get to the right page here. This is the committees. Yes, please. So, the homework that I was given last night, I think we've accomplished. And Deb's going to hand out suggested language in 421 about the advisory committees. As we talked yesterday, we're entering into a gray area where the legislation has changed through our sunset review. And after September 1, the committee language, the advisory committee language, is no longer in 419, but the authority has been granted to the commission to determine committees and how they work and all. So based on yesterday's workshop, 421.1 were some of the rules that I'll say loosely impacted all the committees. While it didn't speak to all the committees that you have, it included firefighter advisory and curriculum and testing, did not speak to the health and wellness. So to validate these committees moving forward, if you so choose, this language here would do that and allow for you to the committee, if you will, to work out the rest of these. And if we need to add additional changes to 421 later, we can. But the changes here today for you to discuss would allow these committees to continue functioning beyond September 1, and we would be within the scope of the state law on that. So all of this is obviously for discussion. We just put some words in there to get the conversation started.
Sure. So for those of you in the audience that weren't able to attend the workshop yesterday, one of the outcomes from that was we did create, and we talked about it previously at the last commission meeting, a committee to look at committees, right? So we developed that committee out of this body of commissioners. It consists of five people. It's chaired by Commissioner Cantu. Also sitting on the committee are Commissioner Coatney, Commissioner Jones, Commissioner Wilson, and Commissioner Smith. And what they're going to do between now and our next meeting is take this and look at developing what those rules might look like going forward so that we can start to take those gradual steps toward not only what we've been asked to do through Sunset, but what we've heard from general members of the fire service that have been coming in large numbers over the last several meetings to express their concerns about how we do need to revamp or retweak our committees. Commissioners, am I leave anything out? Is that pretty much
just
reflect what we talked about?
Weren't we deferring back to the chairs of those committees regarding the term limits and them coming up with the proposal?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Wilson. We did ask the three standing committees look internally and develop a proposal for how potential term limits would not only affect them, but then what they might look like going forward as far as not to develop some type of a system so that we don't just all of a sudden erase all the prerequisite knowledge on any one of those standing committees, just carte blanche, but systematically have a process put into place that will allow us to continue to do the business of the Texas Fire Service. And that's the one thing, the common thread out of all the discussion yesterday was how vitally important these committees, and I'm sure there'll be future committees, are important to making sure that we're getting the legwork done that's carrying the torch for the Texas Fire Service. And we had some great conversations, some great dialogue, and I made the statement more than once, we didn't get here overnight. We're certainly not going to fix it overnight, but I think this is a step in that right direction toward meeting that intent of Sunset and getting us on track with whatever that new committee process or thing might look like in the future. I'm happy to have some more discussion. Are there any other thoughts or comments? I realize we're just getting this, so if y'all want to take a few minutes to look over this if you haven't already, and we can discuss it if need be. Go ahead, Danny.
Okay, Commissioners, thank you. Daniel DeYeer from the Advisory Committee again. I guess one of my concerns I can see as a problem down the road is, does each committee get to create their own way of meeting these requirements? Because I'm on the Advisory Committee, and we can meet and come up with the process and the definition of how we're going to comply with the sunset requirements. But can the Curriculum and Testing Committee come up with their own way, and the Health and Wellness come up with their own way? It seems like we should have direction from y'all as to how that actually plays out. How we plug names into those places, we can do that certainly from our committees, but it seems like we should have an overall direction of what that should look like for y'all.
I guess what I took from yesterday's conversation was, and I realize Commissioner DeVillis is the one that really brought that concept up, was that that would be the step after we hear from you guys. You know, it's important, I'm sure it's important to you as it is to Pat, just not to completely dismantle any one of these committees and do anything that's detrimental to the work that still needs to continue. But at least let's figure out what that process might look like and then take the best pieces of your recommendation, the best pieces of Pat's recommendation, and so forth. And now we can come back and really develop and put that, I guess, that next thought behind that. At least that's how I took it. Any other commissioners, jump in here.
I think a lot of the thinking of the group, too, Daniel, was that you all were you had more intimate knowledge of the members of the committees, of the different committees. So when it came to staggering these term limits without losing that experience, you all would know that best and be able to come back to us and give us a recommendation possibly. It doesn't mean we're going to go with that or whatever, but maybe we come up with a hybrid from all the committees. But that was the thinking, I think, of the group, was that rather than us as a commission try to come up with that, we defer it back to the chairs of the committees, and you all would have more intimate knowledge of that.
I mean, you brought up yesterday that there's almost a natural selection process with advisory, with your example that I believe five of the members have less than, what was it, 3 years?
Five.
5 years, okay. And then the other members. And then I'm sure Pat's looks a little bit different from the people that he works with. And so I think that's what we're trying to get to, is what's that right fit? What makes sense of how to do that staggering piece if that's what the outcome ends up being?
So I agree with all that. I think we can do that. I guess my concern is we're just delaying the process, because for example, what if my committee, we have 9 members, and we say we'll replace 3 members on a 1 year rotation, so it's 3-3-3. We could choose to do that, but now we're going to wait a couple months to come back to y'all, and ultimately it's still going to be y'all's decision on how that looks. So do we replace one member each year for 6 years and then pick 3 of those years where we double up? The Health and Wellness Committee is a completely different makeup, and the Curriculum and Testing Committee is another makeup.
Chief DeYeer.
And I maybe if Pat McAuliffe would like to weigh in on the Curriculum and Testing Committee, I think we can do what you're asking, Commissioner Wilson, but I think we just need a little bit more direction from y'all as to what that should look like when we get done, so that at your next meeting we can present it to you and you can adopt it and we can move forward.
Chief DeYeer, if I may.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Why don't you give the 5 subcommittee members an opportunity to meet at least one time, because we haven't met yet. We just discussed this yesterday. And what we'll do is when we start creating the framework for it, we'll certainly let the committees know, the advisory committee and the other committees know what we're doing, what we're considering and looking at. That way it provides you some insight and direction so you guys can make an informed decision. But I'd be remiss to sit here and expect a direction from us without meeting first.
Okay.
So we'll get that to you. I'm sure Commissioner Cantu, who's our chair, will probably set up a meeting in the not too distant future, and from there we can share our meeting notes with y'all and what we're talking about. So at least it gives you an idea. And I'm sure we're also going to be seeking some of your input as we go along to develop these answers to these questions.
I think that would help. So we'll wait to hear from the committee, I guess, to hear how that...
Committee on committees, yes.
Okay.
It is kind of an evolutionary process, and like I said, we did have some great discussion yesterday.
Sure.
And I think it's really too soon to formulate that, at least until that committee's had the opportunity to get together and really have that discussion.
Well, and that's what I'm just expressing, that before I go to the advisory committee or... You know, Chief McAuliffe goes to his committee, that we have that direction.
We got to do this thing, but we don't know what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
we want to make sure, because we're all going to be held to the same standards.
Sure.
We have to come to the same page. So, We're just looking for that. Thank you.
I fully agree. Thank you, Chief. Also, in the meantime, if you could just get maybe to Commissioner Kent to those names of those folks and approximately how long they're willing to serve. I mean, forever, or I guess, but if you only have 3 years left, for example, let's get that to him so we have a basis of maybe how that rotation might work as well. Does that make sense?
It does and it doesn't. There may be some members who have a definitive timeline, but I think from past experience, after 13 years of serving on that committee, a lot of things come up at times that folks didn't expect, so it changes. So that's why, like I said, the attrition process has pretty much dictated there's been a revolving door in that committee for, you know, every other year or so we've had to replace somebody. But I don't think you can pin that down to future planning. It seems like we should still have some sort of framework to operate within for okay. expectations.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I would say the first framework I would want, not knowing any committee, is just to go back and ask, hey, is anybody looking to step off in the next 1 to 2 years? Just kind of having that ballpark. And then comparing those across the different committees to maybe come up with a game plan that's more consistent and standardized for all of y'all.
Having talked to a couple of other folks on these other committees in the last day, the concern about that is that's still very ambiguous.
It is.
So it's there should place. Still be a framework that exists. Right. In other words, if we're how do we do the succession planning on that committee where it doesn't hurt the committee? Right. And then from there, when it comes time to plug the names into that process, that's where we can learn the committees look. For example, if a member of my committee it has the option of being renewed next year or 5 years down the road, and they raise their hand and say, hey, I'm about to retire anyways, go ahead and put me on that 1 year, we can tweak that. But the framework of the position is what needs to be defined within that 6 year term.
I agree, and I think that's where just having the knowledge of all your committee members, how long they've been on there, when they might step off, just having that framework to start from, I think is where you start from. But I don't have an answer for you today.
Yeah. Well, and I know the Curriculum and Testing Committee just had a resignation that really was unexpected. It came out of nowhere, and now they're looking to replace a member of their committee.
Do you have a proposed solution that addresses your concern other than this is our first step toward a solution?
Well, I could propose one, but it's still ultimately up to y'all to make that decision.
Absolutely, and I think that's what we're trying to do. I have to agree with Commissioner Cody. Let us get this is the plan we're trying to put together. Let us have that first meeting, and
sure,
and we'll try to provide some feedback.
Daniel, I think you're asking for directs. Like if we say I'm gonna give you, and this is just a guess, but you've got 9 members. So over the next 4 years, I need you to pick 2 members each year that are going to expire the next 4 years, plus 1 year is going to have 3. And then you fill in those names. I'm giving you the guide is here's how when you're going to expire. You just put in there who's going to do it. Does that make sense? So that's all he's asking for is when do you want me to get these people out? And I'll plug the names in there. That's what you're asking, correct?
I think that's what y'all are asking, because, yes, at some point we all need to
– We give you the direction of when you're leaving.
Well, yeah, and I think yesterday was just a talking point. I agree with Commissioner Coatney that, you know, let the committee meet. I mean, we have some language in front of us to keep them going past September 1st, and then let the committee meet, and then we should be able to get some better direction from there. So I agree with
Commissioner Coatney. And Commissioner Coatney, when you guys meet, I think – if you kept the chairs of the various committees involved in that discussion, I think that would help make it clearer for us to understand what y'all are wanting. And we can certainly do that.
I agree. Totally get that, too. Yeah,
so if I can just also add, I think it's definitely important. You guys are right. Each committee is comprised separately, different goals. And to keep the ball rolling and have all of the projects and work done by each committee continue, and we can definitely, I think it is a good idea for us to, give you our composition and our input of how we think it can continue, and so when you do meet, just let us know so we can help.
Okay. What you see, we struck a bunch because it was very specific, so we've tried to make it really broad so they can continue.
Dan, do you have any other questions?
No, sir. I didn't know if there was anything else. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
I think we got to remember that we have to establish the committees today before they expire by the legal part that we're breaking the law. That we have to establish that, and that's what in this Mike can explain is that this wording is just vague to get through that. I think it's what we really need to do for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if you want, I could walk through each of these and try to explain it. But what we tried to do, we took these rules that were rather specific. If you look at the strike-through language, and we struck that, and we provided some broad language that if this passes everybody's approval today, this becomes a proposal, but it also validates the standing committees today. Sure. To continue working beyond September 1 until you can formalize this, which whatever comes from the
this
the
is committee. Stop, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This prevents us from just having a complete shutdown of sure. everything we got going on until the committee comes back with something.
Mr. Chan.
For the record, Leonard Chan, just a clarification question on the agenda item. Most of the items, it says advisory committees, including but not limited to committee makeup, terms, limits, and meeting requirements. Those are focused on committee membership work. I'm curious on whether that also covers the number of committees, the scope committees, and as well as their role, especially considering the change in statute coming effective September 1st.
I would say yes from the conversation yesterday. We talked about all committees. I realize we're putting a lot of emphasis on the three standing committees, but we also talked about a piece of for just
we
ad
have,
hoc committees.
We've got two ad hoc committees now that are just getting started, and so the intent is to kind of cover all of that with a broad stroke today to validate them all so we can continue.
Sure.
And committees to come. You know, we're trying to set the balance. I think this is good. I think we're where we needed to be from what we discussed yesterday to move forward and let our new committee that you put together sit down, form this up, go from there. Okay. Keep us in business September 1. This is what we need to do.
All right. Any other thoughts or comments? Anything else from the floor? Okay. With that, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Item 17, matters from the Executive Director. A, decisions of Executive Director in contested cases and consent orders. B, status regarding division functions. A, training approval and testing, test administered, training approvals, record reviews, and online training audits. B, certification of professional development, training applications, IFSEC seals issued, certifications issued, training facilities, curriculum development, library resource request. C, compliance, biennial inspections, compliance officer training issues involving regulated entities. D, information technology, public website design, farm and FIDO improvements, CAPS, central accounting, payroll personnel system, IT security policy, service request.
So, back to where I thought I was 20 minutes ago. There were no contested cases, so no consent orders issued. You see the different division reports in front of you here. Just want to point out a couple of things. One, the number of exams administered in the last quarter, huge number there, 7,000. This is a staff of essentially five people that take care of this. And as it is, the master printer that does all this finally said it had enough, so we're waiting on a part to get in so we can get back to that. So I mean, we wore out a brand-new printer machine with this recently. Record reviews. In our regional meetings, this is becoming a hot topic. We're getting more and more people coming to Texas. You can see right there there's 113 record reviews that have been accomplished. It's safe to say there's probably another 75 to 100 waiting to be reviewed. That's a staff of one doing that. And this is where you start looking at other states and what they're bringing in with them, and they have to review each of those. If they're coming from an IFSAC state, it's a little easier. There are exceptions. California being the big one. They are an IFSAC state now. But the individual walks into Texas, we want them to have firefighter 1, 2, hazmat, awareness, and ops. They come from California, they could be a firefighter 1. The only way to achieve their firefighter 2 is to have a certain number of years on the job already before they get that. So these are the things that staff has to look at to make sure add up. If they come from another state, such as Illinois or New Jersey, there's really a challenge to match some of that up. They're getting better at it. We're seeing a lot of them, but record reviews are a process. So one suggestion we got at a regional meeting that we're going to work on here is much like the compliance inspection where they have a 9 or 10 page guide kind of telling them what they're looking at. We're going to come up with a short 1 or 2 page guide about record reviews and what to submit to hopefully reduce the time and reduce the amount of documents we get. We'll get a stack like this for one individual, and there's one page in there that's useful. From other folks, we get one page, and it doesn't really tell us anything, so we have to go back and forth. So the suggestion, and staff agrees, we'll come up with some kind of guide to help people understand that. Training skills and audits. It talks about 73 online audits, and I just want to make sure everybody understands that's typically one person that does that. Our audits of fire academies and such out there, we still rely on the compliance officers to do that. So that's additional responsibility on those compliance officers that are out there working. On the next page, you'll see a very good record, if you will, of committee meetings, the curriculum and testing meetings, and the topics they talked about. We're going to provide you guys with information about upcoming meetings for all the committees so that if you want to participate, you can. I know there was a suggestion yesterday to come and witness and be part of a curriculum and testing committee. We're going to get that to you. But for a quick history in the last few months of what they've done, you can see that here on page 2 and 3. And then the next one is just the compliance inspections. That's going a lot better. We talked about it earlier. The regional meetings, the compliance officers are coming with us to these regional meetings, and the feedback's been positive. They do feel that the agency is becoming more of a partner in helping everybody achieve and maintain compliance as opposed to just trying to catch them doing something wrong. The last important point to make here is that we believe we are all set to transition to the cloud as far as FIDO and all our records. We've done some stress testing of different systems. We asked for the fire services help last month to test one of these systems. Things work pretty well. So the proposed switch date is going to be August the 3rd. We're hoping to be able to bring that up. It's one of these clouds out here. You'll see it. We'll put our logo on it, so you'll see it in the sky like Batman. But we're hoping that goes well. From all indications, we're ready for it. We're just going to wait till August to do it, and they're still checking some other things. So hopefully in October I'll be able to report back positively on that and how that's worked. That's going to help us in a lot of ways to have that on the cloud now as opposed to just record storage here. And that's really all I have unless there's any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Director Wisco? Thank you.
All right, personnel matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, and duties of the executive director.
Anything? Nothing on this one. No comments? Okay. All right. So before we entertain item 19, I just want to thank everybody in the audience today. This was another great turnout. And whether you got up and spoke or whether you just came here to listen and are going to take this information back to your jurisdictions and have some continued conversation about it, I'm excited about that. I mean, it was great to not see everybody rush out the door after their particular agenda item was done and over with. Everybody kind of stuck in there and hanging on with us, so I appreciate that. And again, this is we're all in this together. I appreciate the time. Everybody takes the time out of their busy schedules to be here. Commissioners, thank you for your work yesterday in the workshop and the work that's coming out with some of these other committees that we have to get straightened out. And it's going to take some time, but I promise you it's a great investment in the Texas Fire Service. So I appreciate your willingness to serve in that capacity. And with that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn on item 19.
Second.
Got a motion by Commissioner Wilson, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank y'all.
12. Better than I thought. Now we got some work.
Yeah. We just had to make sure the committees could continue working right now. So. Thank you.